you doing?
Doing really well. How are you guys doing?
Another beautiful day.
Yeah.
Loving the extended warm weather here into September.
Yeah.
For us Midwesterners.
That's right. We'll take it. So, we will take it.
Yeah.
So talk about end of summer, talking about September. You know, as we look back into September, you know, there were a few things that were kind of going on. You know, we had rate cuts and some other things that we'll get to, but let's just kind of start off with where we always start.
Yeah.
How'd the market do?
All right. So just a few things? Is that how we're teeing this up? There's a lot that played out in September. But, you know, we always just do this check in on the cornerstones of any kind of portfolio that you might expect somebody who's retired or approaching retirement to have in play. And that's going to be a mix of stocks and bonds. So S&P 500, top 500 companies in the U.S., that's kind of our equity or stock proxy that we like to always keep track of month to month. So just above 2% return, 2.14% for the month of September. So that's pretty good. We'll take it. We entered the month with weakness and finished the month in strength. Volatility cuts both ways to the upside and downside. It's just a magnitude of movement. So we tend to pay more attention to the downside volatility. Right. And there's a lot to that. But again, it was volatility both ways. We ended up positive in the equity market as measured by the S&P 500. Very cool. We'll take it. Mm-hmm. Bonds were not left behind either.
Yeah.
So this is good because if you remember back, I don't know what's it been. It's been many podcasts ago.
Right.
But you were finding that you weren't getting that carry through and that pickup in the bond market. So we always like to look at the aggregate bond index. That's going to be a diversified basket of bonds. It was not left out.
Yeah.
You know, we saw about a 1.34% return in the aggregate bond index for the month of September. So again, those two cornerstones firing on all cylinders. Now, a diversified portfolio is going to have a lot more facets to that.
Right. Interesting.
You know, we play the infinite game. There is no start and stop, and your portfolio has to be hooking up with that long-term investment objective. Mm-hmm. So again, that's where the diversification comes in. And again, we just need to lean into the turns. We like creating an edge. How are we going to do it?
Yeah. And you know, one of the things we do is, you know, with the portfolios that we design and how we put them together. But were there any big updates with the portfolios?
You know, not a whole lot.
Right.
And one of the big events that we saw play out was the interest rate mm-hmm. cut that we'll get into. That's one of our topics today. Portfolios, and you probably, if you're a frequent flyer with us, you'll know this because we've been talking about this. We were setting portfolios up for a rate drop.
Right.
And we got it.
Mm-hmm.
So there really wasn't much we had to do but just be in the position. Now, out the other end, there's some thinking here.
Yeah.
So there was not tremendous movement in the portfolios. That was all done late July, early August.
So one thing we wanted to do is kind of dip into, you know, our portfolio and how we look at it.
Right.
And I guess we'll kind of start right off the top, you know, with the philosophy behind it.
Yeah. And philosophy comes, you know, we don't have enough time here today
right.
to really get into it, but let's just try and summarize high level thinking. All right, so imagine that you're in a room
mm-hmm.
and it's dark and you say, you got to find your way out of the room. Well, if that's me, I'm sitting there and I'm feeling around in the dark room with my hands, and chances are I'll get out of the room, but I'll be using my hands to find. Well, what if you got a candle and a map and you had your hands? All of a sudden, our chances of getting out of the room quicker with less tripping and bumping mm-hmm. into things,
safer.
Elevated. Okay, now let's take that very simple analogy and relate it to constructing portfolios and navigating portfolios. It's not just build it and then leave it alone. No,
right.
no.
Right.
It's the infinite game here. We got a lot of movement and a lot of work to be done. And when you think about the tools that we can use to get ourselves out of the proverbial dark room,
right.
we need to use those to our advantage. So I'm of the mind that most investment managers kind of see the world in one dimension. One dimension, it's easy. You can kind of just quote, you know, probabilities and statistics
right.
and say, well, you know, this is how often the market goes up and stuff. That's easy to do.
Good luck.
Yeah. And you can kind of be a little bit lazy with that. But anyway, we're not going to do that. We see the world in three dimensions,
mm-hmm.
three cornerstone dimensions, and that allows us to have more tools at our disposal. And why wouldn't you want that?
Right.
So what's the? So let's just roll through them.
Yeah.
What is the macro market environment? Now, back to, you know, your college days, you might remember, well, wasn't there a macroeconomics course? I didn't say macroeconomics. I said macro market environment. Because truly, what you see on your statement, it's not the economy, it's the markets, right? Mm-hmm. So certainly markets will be, the economy might be expressed through markets, but we really want to know what the macro market environment's doing. The big picture. You know, those are going to be things like interest rate policies, keeping an eye on, you know, where the economy's at, but looking at, you know, revenues at the corporate level and stuff, macro market environment. Then you want to know what traditionally works in that macro market regime. So in probabilities and statistics, we call this frequentism. Mm-hmm. And it's this idea that you're trying to put the odds in your favor. You know, we strive for the best risk-adjusted return that we can achieve for our clients. What does that mean? We want to take a unit of risk and get paid a unit and a half of potential return. That's what we're trying to do by understanding what typically works in that macro market environment. And then how are you going to get there? The timeline, right? Do I need to move quick to this? Or do I need to position myself and wait? Well, we can look at those, the timing of movements based upon how, quite frankly, volatility structure is building. So we're looking at volatility metrics and, quite frankly, the options market. It is a tremendous influence on the overall market movements day to day. So the idea is if we can get the timing right, we can execute the opportunistic portfolio setup for that macro market environment. Get me out of the room.
Yeah.
So Ryan, how do we then structure, you know, we take these three different dimensions, and then how do we build out that foundational piece? How do we build around that?
Right.
What types of investments are we using in client portfolios to get those desired outcomes?
Yeah. So we're not stock pickers here.
Right.
We are asset allocators. We can still create a tremendous edge though. You know, when you really think about, well, why aren't you stock pickers? Well, because one of the things you get to diversify away, if you're thinking about it, is single stock or single business risk. So then that allows us to perhaps have a little bit more stock in general right. on the table. But we really focus on a meat and potatoes approach that, you know, it's not that hard to understand. We're talking ETFs, mutual funds where needed, and perhaps some closed-end funds, again, sparingly. But, you know, ETFs allow us to trade intraday, low cost, high liquidity. I mean, so really it's that. Those are going to be the main mechanisms and vehicles that we use.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the questions that we get a lot from our clients is, well, you know, okay, we've got this structure, you're looking at it, you're managing it, we trust you. But how often are you looking at our strategy, and how often are you anticipating or looking at making moves based on some of the data that we're seeing?
Yeah. You know, my wife should come on and answer this question because it almost never stops.
Yeah, that's right.
And I get myself into quite a bit of trouble with that. But all right, so you're asking a very real question because I've gotten it before too. It's right. like, how often are you truly making? We're not going to make a move just to make a move,
no.
right?
No.
Our process will allow us to execute in a disciplined and timely manner. But when you're looking at that regime, that macro market environment, it's kind of a monthly look at things. Mm-hmm. So you're keeping track of month to month, and then you're grouping those months together. And then the portfolio should seek to exist within maybe a grouping of 3 months with perhaps month-to-month ability to change. Because, you know, let's face it, the system, it gets things wrong too. I mean, nothing is ever perfect. So you've got to also not only know when to hold something, but cut something.
Yeah.
Right.
But really, I think if you look through the lens of a monthly evaluation of the environment you're in, it allows you to adjust the sails as the wind changes prudently.
Well, and it's, you know, it's funny because I get the same thing from my wife. She's like, "Who's texting you so late at night?" I said, "That's just Ryan." You know, we're walking through the portfolio strategies, right. looking at different
true?
Changes. But
you
know, one of the big things that, again in September, the Fed cut rates, and you know, when the Fed cuts rates, Ryan, you know, again, you've heard it before, right? Don't fight the Fed.
No, right.
But how do we anticipate this regime change impacting the portfolio, the strategy, you know, right. maybe over these next three sure. to 6 months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't fight the Fed. It's been some, I mean, those are really good words to live by. But what is the Fed really trying to accomplish?
Right.
I think is really important for us to tease out here. That rate cut, the 50 basis point rate cut that we saw mid-September, was it surprising? Yeah, it was surprising that it actually got done, but was I surprised that Jerome Powell did it? No, not really. After all, the portfolio was set up for that.
Right.
You know, there was just a little more juice on it. So when you look at it, on balance, I mean, that is a very large cut.
Mm-hmm.
That type of cut is typically consistent with like emergency Fed meetings where something really is going on.
Yeah.
And typically something bad is going on. So I would say one of two things is playing out here. Either the, you know, Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve would like to create this kind of, to borrow an Alan Greenspan term, irrational exuberance, and really just the investing public give them a lot of what they want right now for whatever reason. I mean, maybe it's this idea that we're in election time or something like that. I mean, whatever the motivation is, don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But there could be something to it where, you know, you want to give the people what they want. They want more cowbell.
Right.
So, you know, it's that lift that markets get. And why is that? Well, because it increases the supply of money. Or how about this? It could be that the Fed sees something that they truly are concerned about,
right,
to the point that they're willing to do like this very large rate cut. And by the way, the Fed gets a lot of data that we'll never have access to, and they get it quick. So if I was to think that that's where we're headed, it's probably weakness in the jobs market, the labor market. You know, there's still some things out there. You look at some of these big job revisions that we saw. We just had a couple jobs released, and you look at the amount of government workers mm-hmm. that were put on payroll. Those seem to be the ones they pull off really quick, too, in these revisions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I think that one of two things is at play here. We're right now set up for the former. So, I mean, we're kind of thinking that the Fed wants to give the people what they want, right. so to speak. But you always have to wonder. And so guess what? We're down in the weeds looking at that data. Because
yeah.
if it's the latter, right?
yep,
right.
exactly.
Yeah. Drink from a fire hose every day.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Well, and then, you know, with the Fed cutting, how does inflation play into that, right? Because, you know, could it be over? Are we seeing that, you know,
yeah.
I know we still see, you know, the grocery store and the day-to-day lives, some of those increases that are probably here to stay. But Ryan, again, where are we at with inflation?
Yeah. One of the societal problems with inflation is it's an uneven tax. Chances are, if you're tuning into this today, you have money invested in the capital markets.
Mm-hmm.
It's a perfect inflation hedge. You know, think of a business. When you own a stock, you own a business, okay? Doesn't matter what business it is. If they don't sell one more widget, but their stock price goes up, you might go, that's strange. They didn't get any more valuable. No, they didn't. The dollar got less valuable. So it takes more dollars to buy that business, okay? But guess what? As an investor, you owned that business. So you got to keep up with inflation. It's a wonderful hedge. The problem is the person who maybe bagged the groceries in the checkout aisle, chances are, I'm not generally speaking, you know, it's one of those things, they probably don't have a robust allocation to investments. So that's where that uneven tax comes in. And unfortunately, as you see that massive rate cut with the tremendous level of fiscal stimulus, and that means Congress and our nation spending way more than we bring in revenue, it is this tremendous boon for money supply.
Right.
And so think of this idea of scarcity. How does inflation work? Well, when there's more dollars out in the economy, each dollar is worth less.
Mm-hmm.
When there's less dollars, each dollar is worth more. It's a scarcity function. You know, the Mickey Mantle rookie card is, you know, it's a scarcity, so it's got a lot of value to it. Where the Alan Trammell card that I got in every Topps 1984 baseball pack with the stale gum, you know, I can't give them away.
Is it mint condition?
I don't know if I still have them laying around.
Some of the Tigers fans right now, they might appreciate that card, you know.
So, but the bottom line is this. The more that you see money supply build, inflation is going to continue to be a problem. So I unfortunately have this feeling that that rate cut might just reignite that inflation pressure. Now, we'll be watching, because if it's the latter and truly we do kind of roll into a recessionary environment, well, then we don't have to worry about inflation. Right. But if we don't get that, and it's, you know, Derek, you mentioned soft landing or no landing, it's this idea that we don't have any recessionary pressures. The economic cycle is broken, business cycle is broken, and all we do is expand. Well, you know, then I think the inflation, it's here to stay.
Yeah.
And anybody who wants to go back to the 1970s and study that period of time, it's looking kind of similar. You know, we thought we had inflation licked, and then we didn't. And it took Paul Volcker coming in late 70s into early 80s to really break the back with a pretty severe recessionary environment.
Yeah, so to kind of get it over.
Inflation watch is still on, folks. Still on.
Ryan, if you remember when we first started this, we used to kind of joke that the podcast was brought to you by inflation.
That's still our sponsor.
I think it might be. It's the lead sponsor.
Whatever. You know, inflation drives asset prices higher, folks. So, I mean, just own assets. Don't own dollars.
Yeah. Well, and those last two topics that Derek mentioned, right?
Yeah.
The rate cuts, the inflation, kind of sanity check. How does that work with valuations going forward?
Yeah. You know, it's wild because I've spent a lot of time thinking about this. And it's this idea that when I was coming out of my undergrad, it's kind of like, you know, the fundamental analysis is what's a company's revenue relative it, or earnings, I guess I should say, relative to its price, and is it a good deal or a bad deal? The problem is the multiples that we used to use for what's called fundamental analysis, they've kind of been changed because the money supply has changed. So you're almost willing to pay more for something because of the alternatives, right? So I think you have to understand where earnings are and like valuations are, fundamentals are, but also think with an open mind and maybe look more recently. Valuations haven't mattered much.
Right.
So what is, and then you try and look at, well, what's changed to promote that dynamic playing out? And it probably has a lot to do with the money supply. So yes, forward valuations look extremely rich, but if we continue to see that money supply grow, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But yet again, on the check it down card, you know, you do want to pay attention to
that. You gotta know what it is.
Right? Valuations are elevated relative to history. But then also go back and understand it hasn't really mattered because of, I think, a lot of the Fed. And quite frankly, it's the sleeper. Nobody really talks about fiscal stimulus. And that's the deficit spending that we have going on in this nation. So, anyway.
Oh, and one of the things too, Ryan, is just thinking about elevated valuations, not all asset classes might have that same elevated valuation. And so there could be some opportunity that we'll always look at to say, hey, look, maybe this is a better relative valuation where, you know, we can get a little bit more of an edge, you know.
That's that weeds.
Yep. Yep. That's what our 3D system strives for. So again, but to just paint with a broad brushstroke and say, stocks are too expensive. You know, it's like saying real estate's too expensive. What I would suggest is find a ratio of the house that you say is too expensive and look at money supply back when you thought it was reasonable. Take the ratio, now look at money supply and apply the ratio. You might be getting a good deal.
So let's look ahead a little bit, right? So if we're looking into October, I know we got a birthday coming up there. Happy early birthday.
Thank you. Yeah, 40 and around the corner.
That's all right. But what should we look at when we're looking at, you know, the Fed, the markets, the economy? You know, I know we got an election. That'll even be a little bit closer. You know, every day we get closer to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So the election is clearly a catalyst for volatility. Again, if you kind of look at, we've had a really good run. A lot of times during election years, and the thing is, don't feel like we're subscribing to this notion that, well, historically speaking, this is how election years. No. Every year is different. Every day is different. Mm-hmm. Every hour is different. We think with an open mind, but historically what you would see is if you have a robust move in the markets before the election, it's rather muted after the election. That's kind of what we've seen play out. But I think the election is that catalyst for volatility, and that's the up and down. It's the market trying to find its way. Mm-hmm. And we'll spend more time probably next month and then the following really getting into the politics behind investing, if there is such a thing.
Right.
But I think what we've got to really watch right now, inflation prints. You know, we had the money supply increase. You had rates come down. But there's a chance that they're going to turn and burn the other way because you start to recognize that this will reignite inflation. And here's the other problem. You know, where's the data right now? But where was it 12 months ago? Mm-hmm. It's called the comp.
Yeah.
Where was it 12 months ago? And from an inflationary perspective, we're about to get into some tough comps, where all of a sudden it's going to look harder and harder for the suppression of inflation. So we just got to watch these details, because the minute the Fed starts talking about that, you know, rates can't go down as fast, or maybe even they go up, I mean, the market isn't going to like that.
No. Well, we'll stay on it like we always do. Thank you for joining us.
Thank
you. And we'll see everybody next month.
Yeah, it's truly an honor.
See you next month.
Yeah.
Advanced Capital Management Incorporated is a registered investment advisor. Information presented on this program is believed to be factual and up to date, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, and it should not be regarded as complete analysis of the subjects discussed. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk, and unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Tax and estate planning information should not be construed as formal legal or tax advice. Always consult an attorney or tax professional regarding your specific legal or tax situation. Thank you, and we look forward to seeing you next month.